Hello everyone, and thank you for joining today's webinar, Microsoft ML 1.3.0, What's New for Machine Learning in Microsoft R Server. Our presenters for today are Gleb Krivoshev, Principal Engineering Manager, who will be doing the main presentation, and Reddy John, Principal Engineering Manager, who will be helping out with answering your questions. Before we begin, I'd like to cover a few housekeeping items. Today's presentation will run for about an hour. The webinar is being recorded and will be available on demand within 48 hours. A copy of today's presentation and a link to the recording will be sent to you via email once the files are available. If you have any questions during the webcast, please enter your question in the Q&A widget to the right of your screen and click Submit. We'll try and get through as many questions as we can during the live broadcast today. With that, I'd like to turn the presentation over to the Gleb. Gleb, you can get started. Okay. Hi, Gleb. You can get started on your presentation.
All right. Sorry for the slight technical difficulty. So let me start then. So the subject of today's webinar is going to be the Microsoft ML. And what's new in the latest release. So this is the second release of Microsoft ML, which is an R package that enhances machine learning capability of the R server. And it shipped in April, and the release for R server is called 9.1, and the package version is 1.3. So as as you already heard, my name is Gleb Krivoshev, and Reggie Johns is going to be answering your questions. And so without further ado, let's start. I'll just start with a quick overview and then we'll dive into the new features. So as you possibly know, Microsoft R Server provides enterprise-grade scalability, operationalization, and portability across different platforms for users of R. And Microsoft ML Toolkit, it enhances machine learning toolkits with fast, scalable learners, pre-trained models, and other machine learning capabilities that would basically bring world-class and battle-tested Microsoft ML that is used inside the company to the customers. So in our second release, focused on enhancing two main areas, namely the text and image analytics. And sorry, actually three things, text, image analytics, and also bringing the algorithms to support all the platforms that our server supports, such as Hadoop, Spark, and of course, by extension, Linux. So let's again have another let's review basically the machine learning algorithms that we have and kind of go over different features and their extensibility, and their scalability of each algorithm. Just something to be aware of is that different algorithms behave differently. They have different type of strengths and weaknesses. So, for example, Let's start with the several linear learners that we have. We have fast linear and logistic regression. Fast linear is an implementation of stochastic dual coordinate descent, and it supports binary and regression tasks. And it's one of the most scalable trainers that we have. It supports models that we have. It supports billions of rows or examples of training examples. And each example might have up to a billion different features. It works in a streaming fashion, so it's not an issue to have a data set that's significantly larger than memory. Obviously, it also runs on multiple processors, and it runs on Linux and all the other platforms that we support. It also supports Lasso and Ridge regularization, also known as L1 and as L2. And in most cases, it's faster than logistic regression. So if you don't need a very specific logistic regression model, fast linear is usually your best linear learner that you have. Of course, then there's logistic regression, which differs from the one that's built into MRS by the fact that it has L1 and L2. We also have the neural net. And all those learners that I'm describing are basically the same as they were in the previous release. Also, for example, the neural net supports GPU. The fast tree is one of our most accurate and basically it provides the most accuracy of most learners that we have, of all the other learners that we have. However, one issue is that it is memory bound. It requires loading all its data into memory. So it's less scalable, it can handle less features, but if your data set fit into its requirements, you can have a very highly accurate model. And finally, the one-class SVM is a really great little algorithm for finding anomalies, and it does not require a label to work. So therefore, you can just give it a whole bunch of data, and we'll find things that don't fit the general distribution. Okay, and as I mentioned earlier, the latest release brings support to Linux and Hadoop and Spark. A couple notes is that the way that those algorithms work on a distributed environment is that they're ensembling, meaning that each node produces a model, and then those models later combined into a single model. Let's now look at a typical function or typical usage of a learner. So we'll start with the fast linears in our example. So it produces a model. You need to provide it the basically the formula that describes what are your features, what are your label, what is the data set, is that the second parameter. Then of course the learner has its own arguments or hyperparameters, as they're also known, such things as the type of learning you want to do, its regression or binary classification, different other settings such as loss function or L2 weight. And then the third row is the R transforms. In other words, these are R functions that will be applied to each row, kind of a batch at a time. So those functions have to be written in such a way that they work on the subset of data as opposed to the entire data. And then finally, we have special machine learning featurizers, transforms featurizers, you can call them either way. And they provide a highly concentrated, easy to use functionality that is specific to the task you're trying to do. So if you're trying to do text analysis, you can just simply call featureized text. And for most cases, the default parameters will be good enough to end up with a good features for a learner to learn on the text. I'll cover this a bit later as well. So then you can also, of course, add sentiment as a feature that your learner can try to make a decision based on the actual sentiment of a text, like whether it's a positive sentiment, somebody likes something or not. So this just kind of happens out of the box. All you say, get sentiment, and then you get it. And then finally, the way that you determine how to run this algorithm is just providing compute context. The compute context can either be given to an algorithm, or it could be basically in the environment of the R that you're currently running. Is that you could set the context to either Spark or local or Hadoop or anything else, or SQL. So let me switch for a demo, and I'd just like to show you how easy it is to use a sentiment analysis. So what I've created here is, let me just see if you can see it. All right, so I've created a very tiny little data set which contains sentences that express somebody's opinions. So as you can see, it says somebody will love it or hates it. And what we're gonna do, we're just gonna simply run the sentiment model against this data set and just see how well does it do. So I'm just going to run it. And as you can see, we introduced this new verb or a function called featureize. And what it allows you to do is allows you to see the results of the ML transforms and return them back as a data frame. So now the featureization is complete, and then we can take a look at the result. So the output of this RX featureize method is the sentiment. It's a data frame called sentiment. As you can see, the results are in the column called sentiment, and these are values from 0 to 1. Basically, 1 meaning somebody loves something, and closer to 0, somebody hates it. So you can see that I love it; it gives you a very high number. I don't love it. Notice right that the word love is there, but just because it's negation, it cancels it out. Now it's a negative. So this kind of shows you how you can use your sentiment just out of the box. You don't have to train anything. It just works. Okay. Then I am going to, let's see. So let me switch back to the slides. And we can continue on the slides. Oops, sorry, I just went a little bit too far back. Let's see if I can go back to text analytics. So as I mentioned earlier, the sentiment analysis is the new feature in this release. And in addition to it is we also have another kind of tokenization within the text featureizer transform, which is the featureized text. And that one allows you to featureize by characters. And that's quite useful for social text, social media text, such as Twitter or Facebook or any other text that's not very formal and there's a lot of typos and so forth. If you just stay groups of characters, sometimes they're doing a better job than actually the words itself. So you can combine the two. You can have either by tokenization by words or by character. Let's see. I'm just going to kind of skip this slides a bit because these are not really new. Let me just talk a bit about the sentiment analysis that I showed you a few minutes earlier. So we actually ship a model that is the same one as in cognitive services, which means that it does all pretty much the same type of processing. It has some DNN embedding features, some basically pre-trained models that have been trained on a variety of social, mostly social media. So that's actually quite good if you're having, if you're trying to, for example, determine how well is your product being received. So you can take a Twitter feed, score it against the sentiment, and make some judgments about basically the overall sentiment of your users. Okay, so let me now switch to the next subject, which is the image featureization. So this is a functionality that's been very highly requested by our customers, which was basically the ability to take the DNNs and the deep neural nets and then create features out of those images using those neural networks, and then use those features to do a variety of tasks, such as classification or similarity search and so forth. So what we're actually shipping is 4 trained deep neural nets that are allowing you to basically take advantage of the full power of deep neural nets without having to actually spend a bunch of time training them. And there is a variety of applications that you could do that you could actually use this functionality on. Is that whenever you have images, you could basically analyze them, figure out, for example, we had a customer who was trying to understand what kind of plankton there is in the ocean, and so they could actually figure out and count and do a monitoring of the health of the world's oceans. And so they have cameras in the bottom of the sea where they take pictures of the plankton, like a little microscope. And then they use this technology to actually identify species and, track how well is this particular spot in the oceans doing. You can also use it for defects detection in manufacturing. So for example, if you have a, if you're a car manufacturer and you try to see how does your dashboard coming out of the conveyor, and you could basically take a camera that takes pictures, and then you could then send those pictures to the featureizer and see if there's any scratches or defects in the paint and so forth. So it's the kind of applications you could do with this. Let's see. So we actually shipping 4 different models. The 3 of them are based on the ResNet topology. And the number of layers is basically the name of that model. ResNet 18 has 18 layers, ResNet 50 has 50, and ResNet 101 has 101. ResNet has been a winner, I think it was in 2005 or 2006, in the image identification competition. And so it's a highly advanced model that allows you to basically provide analysis of an image. And what do we actually do? We take this model, and then we take the last layer, which actually identifies the class of an image, and we kind of chop it off, and we take the next last to last layer, and that's what we return to the classifier. So then you can actually adapt this model to the problem that you're having. Basically trying to solve the problem that you need to solve as using this model. Okay, so I'm going to run a little demo as well on this. And so the idea is that because we have several models, they have different strengths and weaknesses. So for example, ResNet 18, because it's the smallest and the most compact model, will be the fastest. It'll take the least amount of memory. But the one with 100 layers will be slower, but it'll be more accurate. And AlexNet has a different topology, so depending on what you're doing, you might try several of them. You might try all of them as an ensemble, and you could try, that might basically give you a better result. So let me actually do a demo, just kind of see how easy it is to do it. What I'm going to do is somewhat of a kind of a funny example, is that what I like to do is to tell, based on an image, what kind of animal it is. It's a cat or a dog, and I'm only training a class, so I'm going to train a classifier, and I'm going to train a classifier on only 50 images. So And I will use this deep neural net featurizer. So the interesting thing here is that usually it takes thousands and thousands of images to train image classification system. So in this case, I'll only be using 50 images, and I'll be using basically a kind of a funny data set to identify it. So let me switch to the preview. So I'm going to show you what the data looks like. So these are the cats that I'm using to train. Let me see if you could see it. Okay, looks like it's showing. Here's a picture of dogs. And you can see those pictures are quite complex. You have people in there, you have backgrounds, they have all kinds of strange, like in some cases there are people and dogs, and there are dogs wearing different even pants. It's really funny. And then my test set, I just picked the most kind of bizarre looking cats and dogs I could find. As you can see, they don't really look like, you know, a typical cat, like the one with the butterfly wings and the unicorn horn. But what I'd like to show you is that actually the system's still able to tell that it is a cat or a dog. So how does it all work? Let's switch to the source code and try it. Okay. So first thing I'm doing is what I'll do is take the data, and the data is defined by simply having a text file that points to those images. Okay, so I'm just going to run those guys. So let me just clear the previous results. First, I'm going to load the data. And the data looks something like this. So there's a path to the image, and then there is a, this is a test data set. There's a path to an image, and then there's a label. In my case, I use 1 to say it's a cat, 0, it's a dog. So basically, we're using a cat classifier. Then I will just set the absolute path, so that way it's our engine can find them. And then finally, I'm going to actually train the classifier. As you can see, it's a very, very simple linear classifier. It's not deep neural net or anything like that, just a linear classifier. But the magic is in this line right here, featurize image. So the featurize image going to take those, actually, let's just go through the entire pipeline. So first we load, you know, there's 4 transforms total. First we load an image from the file, and we basically say, you know what, take this image path and convert it into an internal representation of that image, basically load it into memory. Then resize it, and we resize it to the size that this model expects. You can look at the documentation, but specifically for the default featurizer, it's 224 by 224 pixels. And then we take this image object and we turn it into a matrix of floating points, these extract pixels, and then we feed it to this featureize image transform. The featureize image then would take the pixels, run it through this pre-trained deep neural net, and return a vector of 512 floats. And those floats, they're just some high-level features of those of that image. It might, they're not really human understandable, but they describe the image in a high-level way, in such as, you know, is it fuzzy? Does it have, you know, a bunch of straight lines or curves? Is there, does it something that looks like a face? And things like that. But they're kind of expressed in terms of numbers. We don't know, and the fastlinear doesn't know, but what it actually can do is actually, based on a label, it can make a correlation between those features and the classification problem we're trying to do. So on average, it takes something on the order of between 100 to 500 milliseconds per image. So it'll take, you know, basically about 40 seconds, I think, or so to train this linear learner, because it actually goes out and it actually invokes a pretty large neural network to featureize it. Then once that's done, we're going to score it against our test set. So we trained on a train set, as you can see, and then we score it against the test set. They're completely different. There's no images that are similar at all in the two sets, as I've shown. So now, okay, 40 seconds later, it's done. And now let's take a look and see how well do we actually do. So once the model scored, we're actually getting an AUC of 0.9, which if you translate it into accuracy, we only missed one, example was missed. So if I can show you, so that basically we have, my examples are sorted, and so the very last example was incorrectly identified as a cat. And just another thing to show you is that I mentioned that the linear model learns on those features, and those features are just simply, you know, F1, F255, and so forth, and it just simply shows you those things. So, so that is an example of image featureization using the image, the pre-trained deep neural net. So let me switch back to the next slide. All right, so let's talk about another enhancement that we're bringing to the product, and this is called real-time scoring. Real-time scoring is an ability to predict using an existing model in a very fast fashion. If you're trying to operationalize your model or create an application out of it, there's two possibilities. You can either embed it into the SQL server, or you can create a web application using operationalization features of our server. And if you're running it in either case, with the previous version, you basically had to take the data that you're trying to score, send it to the independent R process, you know, using R runtime, then it will invoke R model, you know, do its processing, and then send back the result to SQL process, for example. And that takes a while. I mean, it's sometime between 1 and 100 milliseconds. It takes a very long time. So this is a well-known limitation, and so we addressed it in this release. We are actually allowing this new functionality that actually can take the model and put it directly in the SQL process space. In other words, you'll be able to score it within SQL. The couple limitations, namely that you cannot run R code, you can only run the actual predictions, you know, the actual machine learning algorithms without the R code. Like if you have some other processing, you'll have to do it using some other means. But you're able to score the models with very minimal overhead. So it's we're talking about less than a millisecond latency per call. And this is something that can be very useful if you're actually trying to have a support for many, you know, many requests per second, if you have a low, high latency requirements and so forth. So let me just quickly go over describing how would you go about it. So we're going to actually go and do a demo, and we're going to take the IRIS model. IRIS is a kind of a classic data set that has the different flowers, and based on the length of the petals, you can identify what kind of species of iris it is. It's a very simple data set, a very simple model, and I'm just using it just to show how small the overhead is. If your model is more complex, of course, you know, then it will take longer depending on how long it takes to score your model. So how does it work? So the first thing we need to do is we need to configure the database for this, then we need to prepare the model, and then actually run it from SQL. So let me just kind of switch to my Visual Studio so you'll be able to see how it works. Okay, so once the Visual Studio shows, I'm gonna start the demo. So let's see, let's clear up the workspace here a bit. So the first thing I'm doing, I'm just doing a regular training. So this is the iris data set. You know, it has some, you know, length of the petals and sepals and so forth. And then we're training a logistic regression. It's a very quick, takes less than 100 milliseconds. Almost 100 milliseconds to do this. Now we've created a model, and then we need to run the special command called RX serialize model, and it has this optional parameter, real-time scoring only, that just makes it smaller, but that prevents it from turning it back into a regular R model. So we're just gonna do that. So then we serialize this model, and then we're just gonna write it down to a file. So once we do that, then we can take, and then I'm gonna switch to a SQL server. And here's my SQL server, and I'm just gonna then score the model. But before I can score it, I need to do some other extra step, which is I need to configure this specific database for real-time scoring. So let me just show you something. So if you go to assemblies, you can see that there's basically nothing special, nothing different, just like a normal SQL, SQL CLR assembly. So you need to do is you need to run the command from the RevoScalR package called register rext, and if you run it, it will actually update this database and install the required assemblies into the database so that you could do this real-time scoring. So once that's complete, we will be able to actually do the demo. So okay, so it's almost done. You only have to do it once, right? Once you configure this database, that's all. Once you do it, it's complete. You don't have to do it again. Okay, so let's just take a look at our script. So what do we do? While this was happening, I've also uploaded the model. I have this table called logistic regression models. Let me see. Sorry, that's not it. I need to look at the models table. Okay, so I have several models in there, and I uploaded one called Iris Logistic Regression. So there's a table in a binary format. And then what I'm going to do, I'm going to create a table, which is the output of the model. Let me just run this. And then what I'm going to do, I'm going to score a whole bunch of those requests in a row. So I'm actually having 1,000 scores. So let me just run the whole script at once. This machine is cold, actually. So okay. So as you can see, this is already completed, and the model has been used to score 1,000 examples, and it took less than 2 milliseconds to do it. Now, if I run it a second time, once the SQL server is warmed up, it will be even faster. So it actually takes half a millisecond to score each one of those requests. So that's basically the kind of performance you can expect. Okay, let's switch back to the slides. Okay. Okay, so now you've seen how to do the real-time scoring. And let's review basically what is new in this release at this point. So we've introduced support for Spark, for Hadoop and Linux for Microsoft ML package. We've actually added ensembling, which is can be used either inside Hadoop or Spark or by itself. We've shipping pre-trained models that allow you to do image visualization and sentiment analysis. We had an ability to actually extract the features that were produced using ML featureized transforms, and we added support for ML scoring. So now I would like to switch over to you, and basically let's have a, if you have any questions, please ask, and I'll try to answer them. Okay, so I'm just going to go over some of the questions. Okay. Okay, excellent question. So the first question is, will the serialized model in SQL Server has the training options like transforms and featureization embedded? That's an excellent question. So any ML transform, so let me just make a distinction here. There are transforms, which are defined using the transforms parameter and the ML transforms. In the ML package, Microsoft ML package, every transform that is ML transform will be embedded in the model. So for example, image featureization, sentiment analysis, hashing, or any of those others, normalization and so forth, they will be embedded in the model, and they will basically work as if they were doing, the same way as that they were done during training. Okay, hopefully that answers that question. Let's see, the next question was, how fast is real-time scoring? Can it operate in sub-millisecond? Okay, so the what I mentioned is that the actual scoring overhead, in other words, the time it takes to make the request, prepare the data, and send back the response, is less than half a millisecond. Now, there's other there are other potential factors there. So first is that your own model, like the model you've trained, the featureization that you've added to that model could slow it down and make it longer than this time. So for example, if you have image featureization, that might take maybe 100 milliseconds on top of this half a millisecond. If you have a very complex model with thousands of trees, for example, like a forest, that might take a little longer. So it was something that you need to be mindful of. And of course, there's also the regular latency delays that if customers are located in a different part of the world, it'll take some time for the message to come through. But just the overhead, meaning that the time wasted on just the actual infrastructure work is very small. It's on the order of half a millisecond. Okay, so let's see. Another question is, could those DNN models with feature extraction work on images that are not necessarily photos or real objects, such as spectrograms or sound line, sound files, and other analog signals? This is actually a great question. We haven't tried to run this on a spectrogram or something like that. You could definitely try it, but you have to be aware of a couple things. The models were trained on ImageNet dataset. What that means is that when it was trained on, I think about a million images. Most of those images were photographs, and the task was to classify objects. Most of those images would have one or two objects in them, such as a dog or a person or something else, and they were trained to discriminate between different objects, such as, different animals, different kinds of breeds of dogs, certain, shoes and such. So that's what that model is trained to do. And that's what it's best at. So it might work on spectrogram, but my guess is probably it won't work very well. You can try it and see if it works. It's pretty easy to do because all you have to do is just run this featureized image. Okay. So then the next question is it possible to read images from the file table and run the whole script from SQL Server? As far as I understand, within SQL, the file table contains several fields, which is, okay, just for those who are not familiar, file table is a type of table that basically is mapped to a real file system folder. So on one side, it acts like a SQL table, but on the other hand, it acts like just simply a directory, a collection of files. So for example, if you remove a file from the disk, it will also be removed from that table. So that is a special SQL object that uses FileStream. And that table has several fields. One of those fields is actual bytes or the actual var binary, basically, of whatever's in that file, and the other one's actually path. So what you can do, you can just simply pass the path, as long as you know where the root of that file table is. So you'd be just simply pass the path. Unfortunately, as of now, you cannot pass the bytes directly. Maybe that's what you're asking. The next question is, can GPU exfoliation be used for image visualization? Not at this point. It can only use CPU. How do I get sample codes? So the sample code exists on the package itself. So you can actually go to the package and find it and open it there. There's also documentation that we have online in MSDN. There's some samples there. And I think there's also some GitHub samples that we have. But yes, there's some samples on that. I'm actually going to prepare the blog. I'm going to write a blog on the cats versus doc demo, so it'll be probably out in a couple of weeks. So let's see, Tomasz asked a question, are ResNet models the same as available in CNTK? And the answer to that is yes. As a matter of fact, these are CNTK models. That's something I've not mentioned, but I probably should have, is that the four pre-trained models that we ship are CNTK models that have been trained by the CNTK team. Another question is, the sentiment model offer support for other languages outside of English? And for this version, we are starting with English, but we plan to expand to other languages. As you know, we are shipping with a cadence of about three to four months, and so you can expect support for more languages in next versions. Okay, so another question is, what kind of algorithm are we using for anomaly detection? And the answer to that is that it is one class SVM, support vector machine. Let's see. Then the other question is, does Aribo Scale R contain all open source R packages? And the answer to that is yes and no. The Aribo Scale R itself does not contain all the packages. However, it allows you to use any open source package. We are basically open to, whatever that you could use, you can. Basically, we have a sum of packages that we ship that are basically written by Microsoft. And there's also ability to download any package from CRAN as well. Because it's just like, it is an open source R with enhancements. So you can do anything that open source can. So you can do like bioconductor packages or, just regular CRAN or whatever you want to look for. Okay, so another question that is asked, is it possible to retrain the image featureizer on your own particular images? So it is possible if you're just using CNTK, and what you can do also is you can have your own CNTK training, and you can retrain, take their pre-trained model and retrain it on your particular images. That's possible, but this is outside. In other words, this is a more advanced scenario that you'll have to use a Python integration. That actually is another feature that we're introducing in this release. And you can actually retrain CNTK and use Python to run the training and the scoring. As far as I know, the real-time scoring is not available for that situation. Okay, then there's another question, is what's the difference between Microsoft ML and Aribo Scale R? The relationship is simple. Is basically Microsoft ML is a package that enhances Aribo Scale R product or Microsoft R server product, and it adds additional algorithms, but it is dependent and is based on Aribo concepts. And that's why that you notice that a lot of the algorithms share a very similar signature to the rest of the Aribo Scale R learning algorithms, such as RX Legit and so forth. Like, so logistic regression is very similar in its parameters. The main difference is that from the other Aribo algos is that ML algos, they have this ML transform capability, And they also use different algorithms under the hood. Let's see. Okay, another question was, for sentiment analysis, is it possible to basically top it with a domain-based sentiment with specific domain? And actually, I can show you how you could do this. Okay, that's actually a good question, a great question. So let me do that. I'm going to switch to the demo again. All right, let me know once you can see it. Okay, so the way you would go about it is actually something like this. So imagine that we have a custom data set. In this case, I use Amazon reviews. It has two columns. One is rating, which is 0 to 1. We just basically binarize all the ratings, and text that tells you what was the opinion about this particular product. And then you take any learner that you like, such as linear or tree or neural net, and then you take the sentiment. Actually, in this case, we don't have it. But let me just say, what I'll do, I'm just going to add one called get sentiment in this case. And I'd simply add another ML transform to compute the sentiment. And I will produce another feature called sentiment that will be based on text. And then I just simply update this formula to now include the existing features and the sentiment. So what you'll end up with is that you'll end up with a model that takes into account the general sentiment that we already have, and also the you know, the custom features that are basically learned on that specific data set. And if you have some labeled examples with your domain, in other words, if you have some sentences from the documents you're trying to classify, and then if you could just maybe manually label them, or using some crowdsourcing techniques, if you can label them, and then you could train a model, that will be a combination of this pre-trained sentiment and the, just general text classification. That answered that question, I hope. Okay, so let me switch back to slide. Okay, so there's a kind of an in-depth question about RxFast Linear. Basically, the question is, with RxFast Linear and all the learners that support L1 and L2 regularization, is there a way to check the results and see like what happens when we change the L1 and L2 regularization? And also, is there a way to play around and determine the best regularization weight? It's a great question. Actually, inside of RxFast Linear, what we do, we analyze the data that we're training on, and we're actually trying to find the best L1 and L2 automatically. So if you don't specify anything, they'll just, for most cases, it will get, pretty decent results. And the way that you would then, try to find even better ones is that you can simply sweep them. In other words, run many trainings, and you vary those two arguments, and you just compare the quality of the model. For example, by measuring its accuracy or AUC, area under curve, and so forth. So that's how I would go about it. Okay, so the other question is, can any of your learning algorithms take a non-ensemble approach to run clusters while leveraging parallel computation? The answer is yes, and those algorithms are the ones in the RevoScalar package. Those algorithms work natively on multiple machines, and they scale out on the multiple machines. However, at this point, Microsoft ML algos are only using the ensemble approach. We are working on actually bringing the truly distributed and parallel computation as opposed distributed computation instead of parallel computation onto this package as well. But this will happen in later releases. Okay, and the similar question is, are there any algorithms running in parallel or using just, a parallel on the server? So like I said, all of the RevoScalar algorithms are running, support this ability to run in parallel on basically on the entire cluster. Yeah, I wonder if there's any more questions. I think another question is there a function to sweep L1 and L2 in a Microsoft ML? I believe I already partially answered that question with the auto determination of those variables. And the other one is that you could basically, look at the documentation and see if a valid ranges of L1, L2, and, sweep those. It's something between like 0 and 1 approximately. Okay, so I wonder if I already answered that question about the anomaly detection, but the question there was, what do we use or not? I think it was the one-class SVM. Okay, another question is, can you elaborate on GPU in relation to Microsoft ML, RX Neural Network? Okay, so that algorithm, RX Neural Network, RX Neural Net, actually, it is an algorithm that can be accelerated if you have a CUDA compatible GPU card, such as the Azure K80, for example. There's a Azure machine that has a GPU. You can use that. And that algorithm, neural net, it can basically, if you configure the acceleration to GPU and install appropriate drivers, it will run, between 2 and maybe 100x faster on the GPU versus if it run by itself. It is most advantageous when you have deep, complicated neural nets such as those used for image classification, such as LXNet or other topologies. So hopefully that answers your question. So another question is, could you describe a bit on the outer tuning that's done for L1 and L2? What I'd like to basically say is that the fast-linear algorithm, the way it works, it goes through the data once, and then on the first pass, it computes statistics on the data itself, and then it, using a certain algorithm that we've developed, determines the best values for several parameters, such as L1, L2, also the number of iterations, and let's see, I think that's basically all it does. It just does that. And so in our testing, we've actually have a test infrastructure that we have dozens of data sets, and we've basically we're validating that approach, and we've found that in vast majority of the cases, it outperforms that automatic setting of L1, L2 outperforms the default values. Because different data sets will, need different values for those L1 and L2 and number of iterations, and that's what we're doing. Okay. Okay, I believe there's also a question. Okay, so one of the questions is, are there pre-trained models specific to a vertical, such as automotive or airline? So actually, the answer is that the models are general. They're not, specialized to a particular domain such as that. Instead, they're trained on the, just a broad general domain, images or text. And I'm talking here about the image visualization and sentiment analysis. Sentiment analysis was trained on several social media data sets, basically. So it's used best when you're trying to measure sentiment of, basically a kind of like a social type text. Okay, and so the question is, how would you classify sentiment into something like positive and negative? Would it be greater than X? Okay, so basically the sentiment featurizer, it returns back a sentiment score. And the sentiment score basically works the following. If it's positive, let me just see if I can rerun it. If it's positive, it's closer to 1. And the more positive it is, the closer to 1 it is. And if it's negative, it's closer to 0. If it's neutral, it's somewhere around, you know, in the middle, 0.5 or so. And so if you just simply need to classify your text, you know, positive or negative, you could just use 0.5 as a cutoff and say if anything above it, it's positive, below it, positive is negative. And of course, you can, you know, tune this depending on your specific problem. Okay. Let's see. So one other question is, what is the condition-based maintenance model built in? So I'm not sure what that means. So I wonder if you could clarify that question. Okay, so there's one question about FastTree that says, you know, it implements FastRank. What exactly is it? Okay, so a little bit of history. The FastTree's algorithms is based on algorithms called FastRank, and that is an algorithm that's used to power some of the Bing's ranking functions to determine the best result for a query. It is a boosted tree algorithm, and it is, as it was initially developed for ranking, that's why you see the mention of it, actually. In our package, we don't actually support ranking function at this point. Okay. The other question is, will our server have all algorithms available in Azure ML? And I don't have the answer to that question yet. I mean, I can tell you that some of the algorithms that are in Azure ML are similar to the ones that are in our server, because they come from the same machine learning package that we use inside of Microsoft. They're a little bit different because of the different ages, you know, the time of integration and so forth, but we're working on, of course, bringing them together so that we'll have ability to run the exact same algorithms on both sides. Okay. Okay, is there any other questions? Okay, I'll give a last call for questions. And all right, okay, so I'd like to thank you so much for attending, and I hope this session was useful to you. And if you have any more questions, feel free to reach out to our team or ask any more questions online. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Gleb, for the great presentation. And just as a reminder to everyone, we'll be sending out the slides and the link to the recording of the session over the next 2 days via email. Please take a moment to fill out the survey questions to the right of your screen. Your feedback really helps us to improve our webinars. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and have a great day.